And so to Durrow, a place full of atmosphere. One thinks of the church with its extremely distinctive tower, so widely visible. The wonderful organ inside it, which came originally from the chapel of Trinity College Dublin and is one of the finest organs in the diocese. There's the interesting piece of Durrow history that sometimes, if you look at the memorials of the church, one isn't quite sure what county one's in because of its earlier belonging to Kilkenny. And then outside on the green and round the village, there's the Scarecrow Festival. Durrow's a very distinctive place. For so long, a major port of call on the main road from Dublin to Cork. And we remember all who make the church such a prominent, visible part of that community. We're in 1923. Thankfully, the Civil War ends. The Free State takes its place among the nations of the world at the League of Nations. The potential of the new nation culturally is symbolised as Yeats wins the Nobel Prize for Literature. But ominously, not least in terms of our own time, a customs barrier between the Free State and the United Kingdom becomes effective in March. But meanwhile, and this is what I want to concentrate on in more church-related affairs, earlier informal talks regarding common issues, which I've already mentioned, which began between the Methodists and the Presbyterians and then incorporated the Church of Ireland, those talks morphed into the foundation of the Council of Christian Churches and Religious Communions in Ireland, which became a forerunner of today's Irish Council of Churches. The Irish Council of Churches, to our time, is one of the main ecumenical instruments in Ireland. It provides particularly the Reformed churches with a voice on social affairs that is common. And while it's essentially a pan-Reformed coalition, after Vatican II, it moves alongside the Roman Catholic Church by joining with it in what's called the Irish Interchurch Meeting. And there are also nowadays parallel regular meetings of Church of Ireland and Roman Catholic bishops to discuss common interests. The Irish Council of Churches, in terms of the sheer number of members that it has got huge in a way that would have amazed the founders. And it's a snapshot of multi-ethnic and multicultural Ireland, with so many new churches emerging, both as a result of charismatic and Pentecostalist movements in Ireland, and also the amount of enrichment through immigration that has happened in recent decades. It's remarkable to think that a church nobody would have heard of a few decades ago and is now very substantial, the Redeemed Christian Church of God, was one of the Irish Council of Churches observers at a recent General Synod. It's important that we dialogue with the new churches, the Pentecostal churches, the young churches that have a, as it were, a distinctive ethnicity, as well as with the traditional ones, and that we learn from that dialogue, indeed, how best to welcome the newcomer, while respecting the need of people to worship according to their own language and culture. When one hears now of the four traditional church leaders in Ireland, one also almost thinks that sounds so old-fashioned in terms of the strength and sheer numbers of the newer churches, particularly in our larger cities. But while it's important to respect the right and the joy found in the younger churches allowing people to worship according to their own language and culture, we still need to do far more in harmony than with those younger churches than is yet the case. There's great initiatives like, particularly I think of gospel choirs and the musical coming together that they have produced amongst people who come from various cultural and musical idioms. But there still is a challenge to do more together, to cross cultural boundaries, and to remember again that old principle associated with Lund, which I mentioned before, we must do together everything except what conscience requires us to do separately.